Okay, today is May 15th, Monday, May 15th, 2023. And I'm happy to welcome everyone here. Yesterday's shiur still rings in my mind. I've already gotten some interesting comments. It turns out that the person who asked the question of Reb Menashe Klein with the restaurant, it's Rabbi Shane from Baltimore. He is a nephew of Ruchama Shane, who wrote the unbelievable volume All for the Boss, about that beautiful family from Brooklyn, which most of the descendants live in Israel today. And it may very well be that the Treif restaurant they're referring to is the one with the chickens that had the big scandal and closed down. And Rabbi Shane declared them treif many, many years ago. Another Rabbanim gave hashgacha, and he fought a battle for years. No one listened to him, and it turns out he was absolutely right. The owners of that, where was it, Matanapan? What's it called? Manalapan. So it's a small world, and someone listening put it together. Okay, so all right, we'll come back to that next Sunday. Next Sunday, wow, we're going to deal with Reb Heschel Schechter and Reb El Yashiv. It's a fascinating world. All right, but today let's move into our world. And I'm, at the end of the class, I want to make an important statement and deal with something out of Baltimore, but leave that for the end. And we're not going to finish Reb Meir Shapira today. Hey, we'll get into the heart and try to understand what was different about Chachmei Lublin, and we'll have some interesting anecdotes that you'll be able to repeat to intelligent people on the difference between our world, the Litvish world, the Chassidish world. It's fascinating. Now, so poor Reb Meir Shapira had to travel, raise money, America. So I want to tell you you never know the influence you have in modern times where people can listen on the internet. It turns out that many Talmidim who have studied at Mir, at Brisk, have also listened to a guy named Rakefet. A number of people that have listened to me, it inspired them. Now, interesting, it's not the Sunday class that inspired them, because everyone learns Shatz, Paiskim, Shelet, and Shuvit. It's not that Rakefet discovered the world for them, but the Monday class opened up the whole world of Torah history, which really is not studied anywhere. And our big problem is that in Lakewood, if you want to introduce a course like this, they'll tell you, yeah, Lakewood is great, and we're klutz and slutz, and this is truth, and no one else has truth. You go elsewhere, you'll hear, even in Lubavitch, I remember Lubavitch is saying to me, there are two types of Jews, those who believe and will believe in this description, Gedolei Yisrael of all types, and our struggles, our achievements. So I've turned a few of my students into historians. This is black and white. And Chabad, the young man, picked me up about 30 years ago. Today he's an official historian for Chabad. Two Litvisha picked me up in Mir years ago. And one of them lives in Beit Shemesh. He's involved in history and podcast. And the other one is Dovi Safir, who is back in the Five Towns. Again, not everyone listens to, you know, they take from Rakefet what they wish. If he was taking everything, he'd be living here and contributing and voting and boycotting angels. We got to do what we can. But he's Dovi Safir. I'm very proud of him. He has published quite a few articles in Mishpacha. Very beautiful, well-researched articles. Unfortunately, it's not Mishpacha is not scholarly, so he can't include footnotes. I've told him we need footnotes. You cite things. But the latest thing he did in Mishpacha, and this is a reprint, Mothers of All Yeshivas. And it's about a lady from Philadelphia, which once had a lot of good Jews in it. Her name was Jenny Miller. Bezivik Sheni, she was Fagin. And there's a very unique lady that we have totally forgotten about. I was in the Rabbinate in Philadelphia for a year, 61-62. I was in Lower Merion, and I never heard the name, but I think at that time she was in a senior citizen's residence in Atlantic City. She had no children. And her first husband was very wealthy, did very well in business, and she gave away a fortune to the yeshiva. This, you read it, it's worth reading, Dov Safir's research and the relationship with Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky and the branch that opened there. By the way, from what he writes, it turns out I was right, that Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky was really among the founders of the branch in Philadelphia of Lakewood. Afterwards, Rabbi Tzvei joins with him. You can read about it here. I was corrected that Rabbi Tzvei was first. I always thought of Shmuel was first, but Dov Safir's research supports my understanding. And this lady had a chair, had a Strawberry Mansion. Again, when I mentioned Strawberry Mansion, Natan, your wife would not let you walk there by day today, let alone by night. My wife yet went to the mikveh there. She hasn't forgiven Philadelphia that's the mikveh they could have in Strawberry. It's beyond words. I don't want to go into details. It was a schwitz, a Turkish bath, and women had to go to mikveh walking by non-Jewish men of various colors, sitting there and laughing and making comments to the Jewish girlies. And that's where the mikveh was, Hashem Yerachem. So she lived in Strawberry Mansion, a big mansion, a 15-room home. And whenever Gadol Yisrael came to America, that's where they stayed. And it's a beautiful description here of Rav Meir Shapiro, fundraising in Philadelphia, staying at her house. She offers thousands of dollars a month, and he doesn't take it. He says, a poor person, whatever he says, you take. But Summit of Wealth, she doubled her commitment after he spoke with her. And you can understand what he went through fundraising. But what's beautiful is that in her home there was a special chair where all the gedolim, when they would eat, they would have this chair at the head of the table. That's where the Gadol Hadar sat. Whoever visited Baruch Be'er, whoever visited, sat in that chair. That chair was given to Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky and his wife as a gift when she went to the senior citizens. She said, I want you to have the chair. And there's a beautiful picture here of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky sitting in that chair. They published her picture. I wrote to Dovi, you accomplished something no one else has accomplished, that Mishpacha stopped sinning and published pictures of women like the Torah publishes pictures. Sarah and Avraham, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, Yomo. If the Rebbe says it's a picture, it's a picture. When I want your opinion, I'll give it to you. And please, don't correct me with inaccuracies. Ben, the Rebbe rules. Pictures in the Torah. Women. Shir HaShirim. All right, let me not go further because I want to teach what I want to teach. Now, so he builds the yeshiva. The yeshiva opens. And during this period of the fundraising, I want to zero in now at an Agudat Yisrael, and he tied the yeshiva together with Agudat Yisrael. He didn't have a choice, basically. In order to succeed in Poland, you had to have the Gerer Rebbe on your side. To have the Gerer Rebbe on your side, you had to have Agudat Yisrael on your side. Nowadays, it's very wise if we don't tie yeshivas together with political parties. Unfortunately, in Israel, that's the reality. In other words, Aguda will get money for Panovich and Slobodka, Chevron, etc. And the religious Zionist people will get money for our yeshiva, Merkaz HaRav, others, Hesder Yeshiva, Betel, etc. But it's would be much wiser if we could keep yeshiva out of politics. If Rakevet had his way, I would say to students, politically, make any choice you want as long as it's with Yirat Shemayim. Learning has to be for everyone. You don't want to isolate it. But he didn't have a choice. Now, at one of the Aguda, and all the footnotes are here, Yoshua Grinstein told me he contacted I'd like to hear from him the results. He contacted Rabbi Dr. David Slavin in Sydney, Australia, and telling him about our lectures, but I want to hear more of the conversation. So at one of the Aguda meetings in the 20s, Rav Kahaneman, this is the famous, and then he wasn't so famous, Rabbi Shlomo Yosef Kahneman got up and ripped the hell, pardon my language, but the Rav used the word hell too. Pardon my language, ripped the hell out of the Maram Shapiro. How do you dare establish a yeshiva and you make so much noise? And there's a Yiddish word, taharam. I don't know how to translate it. Noise, publicity. You're hurting all the Litvashi yeshiva. And he yelled and screamed. Now, a few words on Rav Kahaneman. When you hear this, Dave, you're shocked, Rav Kahaneman. So you should know, Rav Kahaneman in his youth, if any of you have ever heard my shirim years ago and will hear it coming, God should give me strength in future years. Rav Kahneman in his youth was a nilui, very good head, and like many iluyim, self-confident and very vocal. Ben, what am I talking about? When you read about the mahapecha, the merit, the rebellion in the yeshiva world against Musa in the early 1900s, one of the leaders was Rav Kahaneman. He matures afterwards, but he was a unique individual. In other words, these traits that he had to yell and shout and rebel, later he used this very constructively to rebuild Torah after the Holocaust. And he gets up and let me just be certain. I'm giving you the right name. Who was him? I have to apologize. Not Rav Kahaneman. Rav Kalmanovich. Rav Avram Kalmanovich, who later builds Mir in America. He attacked him in public and yelled and shouted. And there was a personal reason, because Mir, he was president of Mir Yeshiva. He's not the Rosh Yeshiva in Europe. He was the Nasi. And he attacked them and yelled and screamed in public at the Saguda convention. All my details are correct, except Rav Avram Kalmanovich, not Rav Kahaneman. I have Rav Kahaneman on my mind because his nephew just issued, he has a nephew who won the Nobel Prize, I don't know if you're aware of it, with the Technion, and he's one of those who have come out against the revision of the Supreme Court. But anyway, now, you know what saved the Maran? This was very serious. This is Rav Kalmanovich, president of Mir, and yelling and shouting. What saved him was Rav Menachem Zemba got up and responded. And Rav Menachem Zemba, as I told you, there was no one in Poland. The aura of this Talmud Chacham, again, what Hitler did to us, the manuscripts that were lost, could be if we didn't have Hitler, everyone would have Chidushei Reb Menachem Zembal HaRambam like we use Reb Chaim, but it all disappeared. And he got up and he said to Rav Kalmanovich, you don't understand Poland, it's a different mentality. We're reaching out to the Hasidic world. What you have in Litta cannot be duplicated here. But we must have a focal central yeshiva today. And what Rav Meir Shapiro is doing, no one else could equal him. It is second to none. And when Rav Menachem Zemba finished speaking, Rav Meir Shapiro hugged him and kissed him. The machloket, at least in Agudat Yisrael, was over. And you now had this support. Now, what's fascinating, and here, let me go one step further, the Maram Shapiro, first of all, he was not limited like others, meaning when you're a Rosh Yeshiva, first of all, money is always a factor. You're not free to travel, you have to, they tell stories of Gedolei Yisrael came to America, and they got so involved in learning and teaching, And then they would say to them, but Rebbe, you're here to raise money, not just to cover your ticket. You know, they barely covered their travel ticket. So Maharal Shapiro had money. He could travel, do what he wants. Secondly, and this is a personal factor, he didn't have children. When you don't have children, you're much more limited at this stage in life where he's in his 30s, his 40s. You don't have children. So you're not that limited. Your wife already is a tzaddikit, she goes along. So he decided after this encounter with Rav Kalmanovich, he is going to visit the Litvashi Yeshiva. And he said there was a dual purpose. One purpose was to acquaint himself with their method of learning, why it's so great, why it's so successful, and to see what they could bring into Yachal. That was one reason. The second reason was that they should meet him and should see this is not an innovator, he's not a reformer, you understand? They viewed him, this man, he's reforming, he's changing, he's bringing us down, he's rewriting the book. Anyone who innovates, this is a problem. I can tell you in parentheses, you see, Rabbi Rishkin innovated. It's interesting to watch. In America, he got along with everyone, from the Lubavitcher Rebbe to Rav Moshe to the Rav. In Israel, gradually, he became an island unto himself, if you understand what I'm saying. Whatever the reasons were, there was, he never really integrated into the Israeli rabbinical scene. And there always was this tension. And Rav Meir Shapiro faced the same challenge. You understand, someone in Israel, to look at Rabbi Rishkin, I remember they wrote, he came to some rabbinic conference, he wore a Bekesh Shabbos, like it made headlines, Rav Rishkin in Chabad, Chassidi. He wore a Bekesh, I believe, in his meals at home. Anyone can testify, anyone who's in his house, I'm pretty sure I have it right, that when he ate Friday night and Shabbos lunch, he wore a Bekesh, a big day Shabbos. And I remember they were overwhelmed, but they really never understood Rabbi Rishkin, because here, to be a Rav, you have to have a beard, you have to dress rabbinically. All right, I got away with it, because I never was a practicing rabbi. And my areas are limited to speak and learning with Rabbi Avadi Yosef. All that impressed him was either I know or I don't know. He's not, doesn't care what I look like, and didn't care the way I dress. But, someone sees. I remember I went, Rabbi, let me not bore you with details, but I remember the world gone by. But there was a Litvisher assistant to the chief rabbi here in Jerusalem, and I once went, I think I had to get accreditation, the Sunday Kedushin, this goes back to 69, 70, maybe 69 already. And this guy learned in Europe, he's a good Talmud Chacham, and he starts talking to me and learning, and he walks away, I can. He's a clean-shaven guy, dressed like a bum. How does he know anything? But once you show, you know, in the Litvish Chevel, you see, this is the problem. It's hard for the old God to accept something new, which to them appears revolutionary. And this was the Maharal Shapiro. He appeared revolutionary. A Hasidic Rav wants to organize the world famous yeshiva, build a building. No one heard of a building like this. So it was a dual sword, sharp on both ends. One end, to learn about them, Mir, Slabodka, Telz. The other part of the sword was they should learn about him. So he goes and he visits, and there's a beautiful story. He comes to Rotten. And Rotten, you know, Chafetz Chaim was, Yeruchim Gerelik learned in Rotten. That was one of my contacts with Rotten. Rav Mendel Zaks, the Chafetz Chaim son-in-law, the Bochain of the yeshiva, knew Rotten. There were others I knew at YU who represented Rotten. And Rotten was more edel, I would say, than other yeshiva. The Chafetz Chaim had there was a certain influence, although by this time he wasn't saying Sheyurim, but his very presence, and at times he would give a sikha, say a shmuis, had a terrific influence. So they were mechabed Reb Meir Shapiro to speak. And he spoke about how I, just about how I began the shiur, how in America, how lonely he was. He was there for months, he was fundraising. He was in his hotel room, and you know, the was vagasas given in America, what was the street like in America? The hills, some even on the Lower East Side. You remember my lectures 30, 40 years ago on the Muslim movement, how they came out of the hotel. I think I write about this in Washington. They came out of the hotel on the Lower East Side and they see Jews with pushcarts on Shabbos. And remember what happened? And the first Shabbos, they all fainted, the Rabbanim, their assistants. The second Shabbos, already they didn't yell, shout. The third Shabbos, so one of the Balei Musa opened his mouth and said, you see, we're Mechalel Shabbos. If we can get used to Chilul Shabbos, Mir Zayin Echet Mechalel Shabbos. It's a powerful, powerful thought. It's in, you got exact details in Washington. And Reb Meir Shapiro, so he said into the Ratan the Bachurim that when I was depressed, I would get up in my hotel and start dancing to the words of the psalmist, the Tzadi Dalet and Tehillim, Pasuk Yud Chet, Imamati Motaragli, Chazdecha Hashem Yisadeni. Beautiful. If I say my foot is slipping, your mercy, Hashem, holds me up. And everyone, the Bachurim and Rav, started dancing with him. And I was told that Nut Ne'emah from a Talmud of Rav David Lifshitz, that Rav David told him when he came to Mir, and you, again, I'm letting out secrets, but at my age, let me let the secrets out, because you can judge right, good, bad. See, the Alter Mirror told me Reb David Lifshitz was unique in Mir. He was a little odd. Why? Because everyone in Mir was clean-shaven and dressed like Slabotka in mutton clothes. Kurtzer begodim, short, a kurtzer rekel, a short jacket. Reb David in Mir had a beard already. He wore lang begodim. He was an oddball. But you see, Reb David had a soul. His whole background was different. Charlie's not here now. Charlie's in Eilat. Charlie, we wish you well in Eilat. You shouldn't have the experience of Vic Snow in Eilat. No regards to you and your wife. But Charlie, a neighbor, published a book on Reb David's family. So you see, Reb David was a bit of a balei tshuva. You don't realize that. His whole family was assimilating. He was a Hebraist in his youth. He was friendly with the people who became the leading Zionists. And then he finds himself a Mir. So there is. He was a little bit different than the average Mir yeshiva bacha. So Reb David remembered, he told his Talmidim, that when Reb Meir Shapiro visited, he started singing Nigunim, and everyone danced with him. So people saw, Reb Meir Shapiro, he's different. He's not like us, but warmth, warmkeit, Yiddishkeit, dedication. It opened their minds. Now, this is a famous story, which, again, Eliot, is he true? I can't vouch for it, but I'll tell you, it's anecdotal. But we once asked the Rav, again, remember I told you yesterday that after Shir we used to poke, when we got old and we saw the Rav was a human being, so we could talk to him. So one time we asked the Rav, Rebbe, these Allah Sipur Vashman Hans from Gedolei Yisrael, does this emes anish, all the stories here about Gedolei, are they true or not true? So the Reb said, Ich weiß nicht, sie kennen sein, es ist nur anekdotal. Aber ein Sache kann ich euch sagen. One thing I can tell you, auf uns werden sie nicht erzählen, als auch die Sipur, about me and you, they're not going to tell these stories. That was a very, very sharp answer. So, the story is told that Reb Meir Shapiro, Mir, Slabotka, you know, it was shocking for him to meet the young men learning Torah, clean shaven, dressed up to the most modern dress, suits, jackets, ties. And you see this, if you look at the pictures, you know, you can't lie. Even Mishpachas, to publish the pictures how Reb Aaron Cutler looked in the, as a kid. And you see the Alter Mirror and Reb Lev Malin. Oh, wow. Reb Dov Schwartzman. So the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, Megal Panim B'Torah Shelo Kahalacha. Pirkei Avot, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Yud Aleph. That one of the terrible things is Megala Panim B'Torah Shelo Kahalacha, to give a shir and give halacha, and it's not the real halacha. It's I don't want to use other names, but like base conservative Judaism, there no one can be angry at me. I want to say something else. Conservative Judaism, Megala Panim B'Torah Shelo Kahalacha. So Amira Yeshiva Boy, our Slovakia Yeshiva Boy, says to Meir Shapiro, your Megala Panim B'Torah Shelo Kahalacha. Organizing. Whoever heard of a central yeshiva? Whoever heard of building a building before you have students, before the yeshiva begins? Whoever heard of fundraising for millions of zlata when nothing is there yet? Megala Panim. And Reb Meir Shapiro looks at him and says, name. Du bist Megala. You're the one. Clean shaven. Megala Panim B'Torah Shelo Kahalacha. You got it, Abe? This was the exchange. And so, Reb, you'll hear an anecdote now that you can repeat 1,000 times over. It's very powerful, very deep, this anecdote. You can give a whole year course on it. So when Reb Meir Shapiro came back, so they asked him, new Rebbe, what kind of impression did it make upon you? You traveled, you saw... So Meir Shapiro said, I can tell you, two Bachrim were learning together. One's given a Litvisha and one a Hasidisha, a Yachal boy, a Mir and a Yachal boy. And they come upon the Gemara in Baba Batra and elsewhere that when a bird flew over the head of Yonatan ben Uzziel, the bird died. It was just the intensity of the learning, the fire. It burned the bird alive. The bird died. Well, the Bacha from Chavchle Lubin, he was overwhelmed. The Kedusha, the Tara of Yonatan ben Ziel, Ad Kedei Kach, the Varim Kite, the Yibigegeven Kite. All right. It's amazing. And the Mir Yeshiva boy went into a whole pilpul, who has to pay for the bird? Follow? And you couldn't say it better. Huh? You couldn't say it better. This was Reb Meir Shapiro. Now, let me just go one step further. And we've alluded to this all along, but let me spell it out. Here, the Litvisha had a hard time understanding him. But even in Poland, the Ukraine, Galicia, wherever you had Chassidus, not everyone understood him as well. He was unique. He was a first-rate Talmud Chacham. He dressed immaculately. He came from a wealthy background. He had visions way beyond Poland and the reality. And he was a member of parliament, the Sim, represented Agudat Yisrael. And he spoke Polish. And there's a comment in the footnote, he has sources that on one hand, the Chassidim criticized him. He knew too much Polish. The Socialists and the Bundes criticized him. His Polish wasn't good enough. So he evidently understand new Polish. It was like we have so many yeshiva boys speak Yinglish. He knew Polish, but it couldn't satisfy everyone. For some, it was innovative, and for others, it was not enough, not fancy enough, not polished enough. See, the Rav, people who, and much has been written, people who were, knew nothing of Yiddishkeit, but got to know the Rav, they were blown away by his English, by the level of his English. And, you know, we were blown away by the level of his Yiddish. His Yiddish was, you can't equal him in Yiddish. That's all I can tell you. Any recordings of the Rav in Yiddish, I told you, I once gave it to Rav Yashin's nephew. He gives it back to me a few weeks later, says, you don't know, we in our lives, we never heard a Gadol Hadar speak like this. It was, they were just blown away. But his English also, I learned a lot of words from him that I wouldn't have known otherwise, because the Rav's English was on a tremendous level. And very admirable. Someone comes to America, he was no youngster already. He, 1932, he arrives in America, make the cheshbon, he was born in 1903, he was 29 already. And he already, before that, he knew Polish, Russian, Greek, Latin, Hebrew, Yiddish, a native language. And look at the level of his English. When you read, someone made the comment to me, he reads some of the Rav's writings in English. He has to have a dictionary next to him. And but this was Rav Meir Shapiro. Now, the greatest support he had was the Gera Rebbe. Without the Gera Rebbe, Yachal wouldn't have gotten off the floor. There was another big Rebbe in the area, and that, of course, was the Belzer Rebbe. And here the rumor was, you have to understand, Belz was very close ideologically to Munkach. They were anti-Zionist, anti-Agudat Yisrael. They were very, this is why I've told you, you all know this, this is why the present Belzer Rebbe, in many areas in the Haredi world, he's persona non grata, because he left Satmar. At a certain point, he left Agudat Yisrael for Degel HaTorah. He supports Shas. He's in favor of Tochna Talibah, the core curriculum. But Belz, going back 100 years, was very close to Munkach, what you would call Satmar today. So Rav Meir Shapiro was very smart. He sent 6 of his top students to spend Shabbos at Reb Arila, the Belzer Rebbe's Tish. And you have to understand, again, a Litvak doesn't understand this, but a Tish by Chassidim, what a Tish meant Friday night, and the Shirayim. And by Belz, the minig was that Reb Arila would call out names before he gave them the Shirayim. And if he mentioned your name and sent you Shirayim, like this, was a sign, a halt from him. He, how do you say, a halt? He respects you. He holds your somebody. And that Friday night, he reaches the Shirayim part where he's looking at the 6 young students, and he says, "On these Shirayim is Fadul Lublina Talmidim." The minute the Belzer Rebbe said Lublina Talmidim, they were in the door. Belz did not oppose. He didn't engulf Rav Meir Shapiro with compliments like Gare, but Belz was in the door. And here you have to understand what it means, Fadel Lublina Talmidim. It's recognition that the Rebbe, this is a chassid, this is the message. Now, one time, there's sources for all this. Whether it really happened, I would imagine it did, or it's anecdotal, but it conveys a message. One time, a shtickle Rebbe, Abe, you know what the term a shtickle Rebbe is? You got to read Solomon Pohl's dissertation on Williamsburg. It was later published. A shtickle he has there, Rebbe. A shtickle Rebbe.
Recording stopped. Recording in progress.
Well, what's going on?
Ignore it.
What?
It's okay, ignore it.
Ignore it. Okay. A shtickle Rebbe, you see, Mark Wiener wants to become a Rebbe. He can't. He has no yichus. But if you can discover you have a bit of yichus, no matter who you are, you have the yichus. You're stamped from the Baal Shem Tov, from the Maggid of Mezrich, from the Baal Tanya. You become a shtickle, a bissel a Rebbe, a bit of a Rebbe in English. I don't know if it's a good a shtickle a Rebbe. So a small Rebbe came to the Maram Shapiro, and he said, he's very concerned about Yeshiva Chmei Lublin, because they're going to give a degree, and we'll talk about this, they're going to give degrees when you finish the rabbinate, or tzuvah, the rabban, and we'll talk about the degrees. What happens if someone gets the degree and he's not the greatest learner? Not every YU graduate is a Gadol Hadar, right or wrong? Not every Torah Vadas graduate is a Gadol Hadar. But this guy will think he got a degree, he'll be the Gadol Hadar. So the Lubliner Rebbe answered him, when the Baal Shem Tov began Hasidus, he also was told, you're going to start Rebbeim in Yichus, there'll be someone with big yichus who really shouldn't be a Rebbe, and he'll declare himself a Rebbe. And nevertheless, the Baal Shem Tov established Hasidus, even with this problem that perhaps could arise. Rebbeim, all right, we'll have a shtickel Rebbeim too, but for the good of the klal, for the good of the cause, for the good of the majority, establish it. And see, in reality, I was telling him, you're a shtickel Rebbe, you're an Amoritz, you call yourself a Rebbe, who are you? But nevertheless, the Baal Shem Tov established, you may be right that in the course of time, we'll have the Maram Lublin, we'll have problems, one or two Talmidim won't be on a great level, but we got to go ahead and do what we can do. Lo nitna Torah l'malachei hashari. Natan, it's an anecdote, but it makes sense. Okay, and I want to end off this part of the lectures. What's very sad is, we mentioned last week that Reb Meir Shapiro established the library second to none. 20,000 volumes. And all this, when the Nazis came in, they thought they had a treasure, 20,000 volumes, you know, who knows what these volumes contain. So they called in some of their experts and they gave the opinion, there's nothing here, it's just Talmudic volumes, it's a waste of time, it has nothing of modernity. The volumes were burned in public. And could you imagine all the volumes just before they started burning Jews in public? The little bit that survived with the stamp of Yachal in it wound up in Heichal Shlomo. And I'll just tell you in parentheses what the story was. When the State of Israel was established, the State of Israel was viewed, it viewed itself as the survivors of all the Jews in the world, anything that survived the Holocaust comes into Israel. Now, to a certain degree, this is the way Israel runs until today. What do you do with all the Sfarim that survived and find their way to Israel? Sefer Torah, you know, in hundreds of Sefer Torah found their way to Israel. So we have a whole division of the Mo'atzet, of the Misrata Datot. I don't know how active they are today, many Sefer Torah, but I can tell you in the 50s, the 60s, even during the communist period, Sefer Torah, they work, they refurbish them. You know, you got to make a decision whether it's worth fixing the Sefer Torah. Sometimes they take klafim from various Sefer Torah and put them together. This is a fairly good klaf, put it with this klaf, and you're going to have a Sefer Torah made from various Sefer Torah that survived. What do you do with Svarim? So I don't know if it was the Knesset that ruled it or a committee. So the ruling was made that any Sefer Israel gets, first choice is given to the National Library. They have to have every sefer in the world. But how many shasim do they need? How many rishonim? They have five copies. Suddenly you come up with another 10 copies of the Rif, of the Rush, etc., of the Rambam. So afterwards, they went to other institutions. one of the most went to Heichal Shlomo. I don't know what's happened today, because that library doesn't exist anymore. See, what's happened is that Haredim and B'nai Terah have integrated on the Israeli scene. So they know where to go to get Svarim. You'll see in the Hebrew University National Library, you'll see many Haredim sitting there. They don't have to go crawling. They know where they can find everything. Elliot B. Well and Besora Tovat. And they know where they can find everything. But Heichal Shlomo, one time I used to use the library extensively. I remember in the 70s, the 80s, it was a very important library. And they got, let's say, if something came in from Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin, well, the National Library didn't need it, but then they would give it right away to Heichal Shlomo. The other institution that got Svarim was Yad Rav Herzog, that put out the Talmudic Encyclopedia. They built up a tremendous library. So Rav Hutton explained to me that once the National Library waived it, they didn't need it, they were one of the Heichal Shlomo, Yad Rav Herzog, they were next in line. The Yad Rav Herzog Library today is found in Yeshurun. Everything moved to Yeshurun. I don't know whether that, I think that's available to the public either. It's just used in their own research. But you see, what's happened is that the computerization, who needs libraries today? You go Hebrew Book, other websites, Bar Ilan, other websites, it's all there. It's only people like old geezers, like a guy named Rakefet. I can't read something online. It's just impossible. That's not real. I have to hold the book in my hand. But the new generation laughs at you. And I give you a simple example. When the Mizrahi published that interview with that biography of me, I should say, so they gave me copies for my grandchildren. Maybe one or two took it, the rest said, we have it online. Who needs a hard copy? Takes up space. If not for Shabbos, all the Hebrew book publishers would disappear. If not for Shabbos, plain and simple. So they burned. I mean, the Nazis, oh, God have mercy. I still oppose having taken reparations from Germany. I still oppose. Even though people told us that the country was so impoverished, I mean, people told us this 69, 70 years, 70. People who lived it said, you don't know what it was like. And when we got the reparations, it's like manna from heaven. I don't know. I have my problem. One other comment. Remember, we mentioned there was someone who worked with wood in Lublin. And an Elachayid, and he wanted to build the model of the Beit HaMikdash. That model was built, it was on display when you walked in to Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. It was built under the guidance and tutelage of Rav Meir Shapiro. Rav Meir Shapiro felt it would be tremendous help in learning say the Kodshim. And you all know that Kodshim was so neglected. Modern day State of Israel, how many books have come out? I have two volumes, total pictures of the Beit HaMikdash and the Kohanim and the clothes and the Kalim. We need it. We need it. We want to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. And people were very happy about this model because it brought to life something which until then had not been tangible. The Nazis totally destroyed it. See? All that totally, completely disappeared. Okay. I want to go further, but I also want to watch the clock.
Is there a photograph of the model?
There is a photograph of Rav Meir Shapiro standing in front of the model. I think that photograph, I saw it in Moshata Torah B'Eidapa B'Inyanim U'B'Chubanim by Rav, edited by my professor, Rabbi Dr. Shmuel Kalman Mirsky. I'm pretty sure I saw the picture there. But the picture may be in line, you know. There's so much that's been put online. Could be the yeshiva is online. But I can see the picture in front of me of Rav Meir Shapiro standing on the side of the beautiful model. Here in Israel, at the Malon Eretz Tzvi, the person who built it, it's a whole story. His son was killed at that very spot in Milchemet HaShichrua. What do you have there? What picture? Which one?
Of the model.
Of the model? Is Rav Meir Shapiro in the picture? Or just the model?
No, there's a lot of people around.
A lot of people. Okay. Very nice. Well, do me a favor. Send me a copy, a link to the picture, and we can copy it and give it out if anyone's interested. Okay. Now, now we come to the yeshiva
Prasad.
What?
You talk about the Holy Land?
Yeah, the Holy Land had the model. That model was, so I should have told you the whole story. His son was killed at that spot. It was a wealthy Jew, a survivor living in South America. So the government, he said, he contacted, he wants to build a hotel in memory of his son, Tzvi, Eretz Tzvi. Mama, she built a beautiful hotel. It's where the Holy Land building come right. That model was built by a professor from Hebrew U, and it was a beautiful model. I remember taking my children to see it. That model was moved to the Israeli Museum today. You can see it at the complex at the Israeli Museum. Kanayin Hara, we have pictures today, and their I would imagine their computer programs. I think I even saw one for sale of what you can do today. Baruch Hashem, Ashreinu Shezachinu. Now, Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. What was unique about it? What was different about it? Okay. First of all, Rav Meir Shapiro became the Rosh Yeshiva. During his lifetime, the last few years after the yeshiva opened, you had 4 years, let's say 5 years, where he was still alive. He was the dominant figure, the Rosh Yeshiva, the pedagogue par excellence. There's a wonderful volume that came out by Mordechai Groyer. We're talking Rav Shimshon Feuerl Hirsch's family. These are, I knew Rabbi Dr. Mordechai Groyer. Yeah, he was principal of Chorev. He also had a PhD from Bar Ilan. He did a classic work, Ohalei Torah, on the history of the yeshivat. And he claims that Rav Meir Shapiro was one of the greatest pedagogues that the Torah people had in the last 1,000 years. And this is a yeke, giving credit to a Hasidic individual. It was not only the Daf Yomi, but the man as a Rebbe, his relationship with students, the way he was able to guide them and teach them and inspire them, second to none. The question was, and here I come to a very important point, and I'm touching upon something which you may or may have not ever heard before. I was exposed to it because there are some Sfarim and articles that I read, and as a pure Litvak, I was impressed, but not overwhelmed. How do you teach? What's the basis of Yachal? He's now seen all the Litvashi yeshivat. And, you know, people debating. It's our chance to do something innovative. So one proposal was, why don't we learn the Daf Yomi in the yeshiva? And he was considering it. The Daf Yomi, it turned out, people with tremendous bekiyot, he consulted with one of the famous Rabbeim, the Slonimah Rebbe. We're talking about Rabbi Avraham Weinberg, who also had a yeshiva, also was involved in teaching. They were pedagogues. And he told the Maharam Shapiro that, you know, to teach Daf Yomi, he made the following comparison. And this is, I'm quoting now from the Slonimah. Told him as follows. A father wants his son to become a baker. So he takes him to a baking factory, teach my son. All right. They take the son in and they put him up front to sell bread. Avraham Weinberg said, the Slonimah said, this kid sells bread, but he's never going to learn how to make bread. For him to really become a baker, take him not up front to sell, take him downstairs where the ovens are and let him learn how to begin from scratch and put it all together. If you teach Daf Yomi, you'll have youngsters coming out with a certain amount of bikiyot, which is good. But how do you paskin halacha? What's the inner workings? What are the guts of Torah Sheba'al Peh? The sinews, the veins. Not good, Daf Yomi. Okay? Interesting point of view. By the way, very well taken. Absolutely correct. Then you look at it a different way. The Litvish way. Analysis. But with the literature way, there are two drawbacks. One drawback is obvious. You analyze that topic that's right in front of you. You go very deep, but you're not very broad. You're much more limited. And all of you know that this is a problem in Litvish yeshivas that exist until today. I don't have to talk about us. 100 years ago, Reb Lazy Yehuda Finkel, fellas in Mir, young men in Mir, they got involved with Baba Batra, Baba Metzia, but they did 30 daf in a year. Remember Reb Lazy Yehuda Finkel? He started Hatmada drives, $50. Anyone who knows that can do the three babas and Ktuvat, Yuvamat in 1 year. It's a problem. The literature, yes, it sharpens your mind. No question about it. It's depth. But on the other hand, how much breitkeit, width do you cover? You're limited. There's another critique of the literature approach, which I can tell you there's a lot of, I can't go into it in great detail, I've spoken about it over the decades. You see, you take Reb Chaim. Rabbi Lichtenstein, by the way, wrote about this. Tell me, Reb Chaim analyzes a Rambam. It's terrific. Comes up with understanding. Is that really the Rambam, or is that Reb Chaim using the Rambam as a starting point for his own thinking and analysis? See, there's a delicate area here. Hat the Rambam das is emis, the Rambam hat das gemeint, that's what the Rambam meant? This is really the Rambam? Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg, he critiques Reb Chaim, says it's a perish on the Rambam, but it's not. Could be the Rambam held differently, thought differently. So there's the literature approach has certain limitations. And you have to remember in back of it all with the literature approach, because the Bikiyat was limited their ability to paskin halacha was limited. They didn't see the total picture, the paskin. So a kid learns chulin, but that learning chulin can open his mind. How do you paskin? The treifus, a kurkabun, a needle, all that goes into it. In Litva, they didn't touch it. Reb Meir Shapiro came up with an approach. He was not the first one to invent it, but he publicized it. It's called Lishitatal. That's the technical name you will see it referred to. What it means is, yes, he took Rebbe Meir and he would show all over Shas how Rebbe Meir's opinions followed a certain basic understanding. He could take Rebbe Yehuda. He could take the Rashbi. There was a thread that connected all their understandings. So, and Svarim have been written, articles have been written, and Lishitato, that's what they call it. It's fascinating. As a Litvak, why don't I sign up? I'll tell you why. Sometimes it's forced. See, a person can have different opinions and different understanding on many topics. To say Lishitato on all of Shas, at times you have to force it into your understanding. All right, people will claim Reb Chaim too. He had a Rambam in front of him. He has the Rav would say that what Reb Chaim argued with his Mechutin, Reb Elia Feinstein, so Reb Elia would walk away and he would tell the Rav, your Zayda, meaning the other Zayda, Reb Chaim, it's Zayin, words of iron. You can't budge him. But what Reb Elia Feinstein was saying was Reb Chaim was wrong, but you can't budge him, because he already had a certain svara, and he would fit the Balmor into his thinking no matter what. But you see, Lishitato, what it accomplishes, it's depth, but it's also bekiyah. Do you follow me, Ben? You can't have Lishitato on one sugya in the Gemara. Lishitato has to take you 5, 6, 7 different sugyas you have to analyze. You have to see the common thread that connects them. And this was Kol Zman Reb Meir Shapira was alive. Derech HaLimud in Yachal was Lishitato. Okay. And that was unique. That was different, and this is where Yeshivat Chachalei Lublin was needed students who already had some bekiyut when they came in. It's not like YU, not like Yeshivat Chochanan, where you can have kids coming in from NCSY. Very little background. They go to the Jewish Studies program. Within 6-7 years, these kids can be writing Chidushei Torah in the Signon of Reb Chaim, of Reb Baruch Be'er. You see Beit Yitzchak, you see publications. Sometimes it's amazing to see kids who had so little background, but the Bekiyot takes them much longer to come to. Sometimes it only comes after they leave the yeshiva and graduate and start learning not just for Amkut, but for Bekiyot. In Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin, you couldn't begin with kids that knew nothing. These kids had to have background. And this is why, to get into the yeshiva and hear their legendary stories, lachatchila, they required kids who knew 200 daf gemara by heart. B'dieved, kids got in if you could test them on 200 daf gemara, and they could handle the Gemara, Rashi, Tosfot. They didn't know it necessarily by heart, but they knew it backwards and forwards. But these were the requirements. Chachmei Lublin did not begin as a yeshiva for the total populace. It began and continued as a yeshiva for Mitsuyanim. And in all the memoir literature, that comes across. And there's no better example than Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung, later of Montreal. Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung, I can tell you, not just from his son-in-law, who's my dear student from 50-plus years ago, but I know from my witnesses, you take the Vilna Shas. I mean, you have to take the same Shas. You can't take a Shas with a different format. But you take the Vilna Shas and stick a pin into the Gemara, he will tell you on every daf where the pin fell. Exactly the word. That's a certain mind. I know someone in Israel, Shas Kohn they call him. Maybe some of you know him. I met him through my son-in-law. All right, I was a big shot. I told him a tshuva of the Netziv. He kissed me. He went crazy with joy because it was something that dealt with what we were talking with and it gave him a whole new insight. But boy, I could tell him a tshuva of the Netziv and apply it. Boy, okay, the Meshiv Dava, fine. But wow, his ability, his bekiyot, the exact number of lines in Tosfos. Yeah, my teeth fell out. Baruch Hashem, all right. And then on the other hand, I calmed down and I said, all right, that's it. It doesn't make you the Gadol Hador. It makes you, you have a photographic memory. You need to improve about that. But this was Lishitato. This was not, see why you, let me let you in on secrets. Why you began the first yeshiva in America, yeshiva of Yisrael Chanan. And it remained the yeshiva. Rabbi Rebbe was in Tulsa, Oklahoma, 100 years ago, helping his family with facing bankruptcy and the oil business stand it all, rivaling them. So while he was gone, they brought in Teachers Institute. He wasn't happy, but it was a fait accompli. Many years later, I mean, again, if you guys had any sacred, you'd make a movie out of this, write about it. It's beyond words. Many years later, there was a basketball star named Marvin Hershkowitz. He was all city in the Bronx, a Bronx boy. He was one of the top high school basketball players in New York City. And he was interested in becoming a good Jew. He's a typical assimilating Jewish home. Maybe the home was kosher, but nothing more. And he comes, he wants to go to Yeshiva College. They told him, what are we going to do with you? You can't learn. What are you talking about? In my time as a Rebbe, a kid came in from Syracuse. Miss Davis wanted to throw him out. He had no background in learning. I saved the kid's life. He's listening to this year now. Saved the kid's life. So, Reb Saracek, Mark, you know I'm talking about? These are legendary names. Even Morty knows, and he's not a YU person. Reb Saracek pleaded with Dr. Belkin, this kid will put it, he was the coach of the basketball team. I knew Reb Saracek. He had a cousin, by the way, who was a conservative rabbi, and the Shomer Shabbos, they came from good stock. And he pleaded with Dr. Belkin, do something, take him in. You don't know what it'll do. And he told Dr. Belkin, ultimately, it'll help you in fundraising. You follow me? Yeshiva, what, they win 50 straight games? No one said Rakefet gave 50 straight years of Shurim and Shelet and Shurim. Who's interested? Who's going to get? Yeshiva, the basketball team, we gave $50,000 in honor of the basketball team. You follow? So Dr. Belkin picked up a phone Avram Beistin picked up a phone to him. He's Dr. Belkin's Talmud, and Dr. Belkin was a Rosh Yeshiva in the 30s. And Dr. Belkin had confidence in him and said, Abe, can you do me a favor and organize a program for youngsters who have no background? And that's how the Jewish Studies program began. Excuse me?
Morris or Abe?
There were brothers. I think it was Abe or Morris. I don't know.
Morris
ran it, then it's Morris. Then I'm confusing Abe with Morris. They were brothers. I knew both of them, but it's many years have gone by. One was Rabbi Marine Park, Jewish Center. Malka's aunt, Davendale, she was president of the sisterhood. One brother ran JSP, the Jewish Studies Program. But you say his name was Morris, and who put out the ones on the Rav?
The other brother.
Abe. Abe put out. Okay, so that's why I know the name Abe more than Morris. So you see, there were demonstrations against this. What's going to happen? Who led one of the leaders of the demonstrations? No, give me the name, Mark. The Babe, Aaron Lichtenstein. Aaron Lichtenstein demonstrated. It all came out when they were sitting shiva for Aaron. It all came out, the stories with the Hershkowitz family. He demonstrated against it. Today, YU is a yeshiva with many divisions. The Big Iluyim is only part of it. You have a Beis Medrash program. You have the Erna Michaels, whatever. The Teachers Institute's gone through many different names. What do they call it? You tell me, Teachers Institute today. Erna Michael, it was my time, may have a new division today. You have the Jewish Studies Program. What do they call it today?
JSS, James Stryer School.
James Stryer School. All right, take a look. They got an idiot like Rakefet yelling and shouting. They should have a division for Chassidim. Tomchei Tumimim already. You have all these different divisions. Capitalize. But no, Rakefet, what does he know? He just lives in Jerusalem and he's off the beaten path. But you see, this was Lublin. You follow the difference, Abe? It's not Lakewood. You learned in Lakewood. Lakewood's a Litvisha yeshiva. Or maybe to what ultimately happened is everyone, listen, you can't be a total amoritz and not know Shas and Paiskim, so you have a Seidin Bekiyut. But the heart of learning in the Litvisha yeshiva is eager.
I heard that a big part of Rabbi's shiur
was Lishitaso. Believe me, Lishitato comes up, Reb Chaim with the Rambams, but you see, here it was fundamentally Lishitato, that you took all of Shas and all of the Amora and you showed, sugya by sugya, the same thread of thinking. In our Lundis, of course it plays a role. It has to play a role. But it's not as widespread, I'd say. It's more limited. It's more horizontal than vertical. You follow? If I can use that analogy. Now, you're showing me the time. No, let me go to 9 to 10:20. Let me teach what I have to say. Afterwards, you can agree or disagree. But I have to get it out of my system, or I won't survive. Okay. Now, and these were the students. And you could have among them people who really knew 200 daf by heart. L'chatchila, all the interviews, all the memoir literature, those were the elite. Then you had people who can read mitzvah and learning. You know, you can talk and learning with them, but they don't know by heart. I can tell you the Rav didn't know Shash by heart. I can tell you what would happen, and you all know these stories are legendary. I lived it all the years. I sat here, Aaron sat there, and the Rav sat here. So look what would happen. The Rav would quote a Gemara, and Aaron, Avu is this, Avu state, was for daf? And Aaron would shoot back. It was a sight to see. He'd shoot back 100% all of Shas. In the 4 years we sat next opposite each other, one time he was wrong. One time. In Ave Psachim, Aaron said, Kuf Bet Omer Aleph, and the exact words, the Rav was, the sugya was there, but the words was quoting was Kuf Aleph Omer Bet, what the Rav was quoting. But that was, it was a sight to see, a sight to live. Morty, the tragedy is we thought it would last forever. That's youth, that's life. You have to have that feeling. Otherwise you can't go on. We thought it would last forever. Go back to my shiur of yesterday with the difference of the chassid and the litvak. A chassid hat alamal a rebbe. A litvak has a rebbe once in his life. But the challenge is to keep that image feeling alive. That's we saw in Reb Menashe Klein's tshuva, and I elaborate. It was a good shiur yesterday. Abe, I have no right to compliment myself, but it was a good shiur. How I discovered that when I discovered Reb Menashe, I'm still shaking. Mark, I am still shaking. I walked out of the funeral upset. You have no idea. I'm teaching. I believe with all my heart. I want to raise Talmidim Gedolei Yisrael. Was hat der Satan mit einem Million Talen in keinem Treue mit einem Million Talen ornäht? Wow. David, that's yesterday's shiur. Smack. Get back here now. Okay. Now, I'll tell you what else is interesting. In Chachmei Lublin, they never learned Chassidus. Here you would think it's a yeshiva catering to Chassidim. Didn't learn Chassidus. Didn't really have any Musa sections. But what gave it the Chassidic overtone was Reb Meir Shapiro would give Shmuasim. Sichot, we would call it in modern Hebrew. And there you could feel the Hasidic approach, the Simcha, the Ahavat Yisrael, the emotion. And he dealt with contemporary problems. You couldn't not understand that this was Reb Meir Simcha, one of the leaders of Agudat Yisrael, a member of the Sem, the Polish Parliament. He was real. And this atmosphere, the whole Chachmei Lublin, you could feel the Hasidic overtone, but there was really no Hasidic text. The reason may be very simple. And this is Kolzman, Reb Meir Shapiro was alive. Things alter after his death because they could never find such a focal personality who could unite the whole yeshiva. But could simply be, if you're going to teach Hasidus, the minute you choose a text, you offend part of the Olam, part of the crowd. You follow me? What are you going to teach? You're going to take a text that they study in Ger, the Ger Chassidim, who, by the way, were the dominant Chassidus in the yeshiva, obviously. No, they're happy. Others are offended. You're going to take Likutei Torah? What's going on here? Your Lubavitch? What about the non-Lubavitch? And you can go on with Chassidic Sfarim. They're limited to that type of chassid. The whole idea behind Yachal, every chassid should feel at home. And this Reb Meir Simcha was a kunstmacher. That's the word, the Yiddish word, a kunstmacher. Ben translate kunstmacher. Miracles, could do miracles. And his varimkeit, his love for the students, it was overwhelming. And I'll tell you, Lendorf, I'll tell you a few stories. Lo aleinu, a Talmud of the yeshiva died young. And you always have, when you look back, no one can say they didn't taste death in high school and college. Here in Israel, unfortunately, it's more prevalent because of the battles we have to fight to keep alive. But I remember my classmate, I had a classmate, Josh Gershon, was president of the freshman class that I was a member of, my class of 1959, Yeshiva College. He died that year, cancer. And, it happens. And you can imagine what a tragedy, a young man. And Reb Meir Shapiro eulogizes the student. And Reb Meir Shapiro says, my pain is no less than that of his parents. And that tells you something. A Rebbe can use those words, my pain no less than that of his parents. Now, there were even two students in the yeshiva who came from a poor background. Other students, when there was no yeshiva, they had where to go, where to return. You can see the names, not important. Unfortunately, one of them doesn't survive, killed by Hitler. Reb Meir and his wife adopted them as their own children. Now remember, what did we say a few minutes ago? They were childless. And he always felt the students in the yeshiva were my children. These students, not only did they adopt them, they married them off. They made the wedding. There was such love. This was Reb Meir Shapiro. They were orphans. Any student who was a yatom, it's like he had a father and mother in the yeshiva. And this was Yachal. It took on a home, an atmosphere, a totality, love, emotion. The Rosh Yeshiva, Lishitato, was very unique. And this was Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. No other yeshiva equaled it. In that total picture, you cannot find in Litta one yeshiva that had this total environment, the love, the relationship, the Rebbe, the Talmud. It was unique. And Reb Meir Shapiro put it on the map. The early years of the yeshiva, Reb Shmuel Vosnoch, a name you all know, later becomes very well known, the posek of B'nai Brak, so many Svarim, Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin in B'nai Brak. So he told the story that 7th of Adar was Reb Meir Shapiro's birthday. So students asked him, Rebbe, what would you like as a birthday gift? And he said, I'd like 60 students to each choose a mesechet for that day and make a siyum shas, as a birthday gift. And they described Reb Shmuel Vosner, he lives at one bacha, Yosef Boim, particularly stood out. He learned Baba Batra from start to finish in one day. Another student, Chaim Leibush, learned the entire tractate of Nazir with all its commentaries on that day. You see, Abe, that's you can't tell a story like this about a Litvish yeshiva. And I'll end off with a true story that I know. Entertain you. True story. I've told it over the decades. So if you're studying with me for decades, you may have heard it. But I heard it from the people involved. Rabbi Dr. Norman Frimmer was from Chicago, from what you call Skokie today. Talmid Muvhak of Reb Chaim Zimmerman, when Reb Chaim was Rosh Yeshiva. That story goes back to the 60s. And Reb Chaim was a Gaon Adir, character par excellence. His final years in Ramot, Yerushalayim. Son-in-law is my student, Jacob Henry Blinder. And Reb Chaim Zimmerman was a character. And he was Americanized. He was kicked out of Europe by his uncle, Reb Baruch Ber, because he said, you remain in Europe, you'll ruin all the yeshiva, because he had a lot of secular knowledge. And that saved his life. He kicked them out, told them, go to America. And he went to Yeshiva Shul Shochanan. His chavruta was Dov Sherman. My kid brother is married to Rabbi Dov Sherman's daughter. Dov Sherman was a Rebbe in RJJ for time immemorial. So Reb Chaim Zimmerman, one morning he says to Dov Frimmer, he says, Dov, I have to have a corned beef sandwich. And Dov says, Rebbe, it's the 9 days. Dov says, don't worry about, Rabbi Shimon says, don't worry about the 9 days. Meet me at the deli. 8 o'clock tonight. This was 9 o'clock in the morning. Come to the deli, the Rebbe wants to have corned beef, invites you 8 o'clock at night. You know the story or not? Huh? And there's Rabbi Zimmer makes a siyum on Baba Batra. And Dov, and Norman Frimmer, Dov is Norman Frimmer's son. And Norman Frimmer says, Rebbe, when did you start? So Zim looks at his watch. 10 o'clock this morning. There you see him. Baba Batra. You have the story in Yachal. So my dear students, I wanted to give you a feeling of Yachal today. I think it was a lecture that spoke to us. We could feel the difference. It's not Litta. It's not the old type of Hasidic yeshiva where you daven up chulin and you daven up Shabbos and you learn halacha l'maisa. But this was unique, his personality, the atmosphere, the shitato. And we spoke about Jenny Miller, Zichrona Levracha. I wrote to Dovi Safir, what you did is a chesed shel emet, brought the lady back to life. But still you get the feeling of Reb Meir Shapiro dancing and that Reb David Lifshitz remembered it all his life. And this was the yeshiva. We have more to go, but we'll leave that for next week. There's Rat Hashem. Yes, Morty.
What was the structure of the learning? Was it just sheer quality? Were there shearing, different rebbeim?
Next week. Yeah, the question you asked is very fascinating because it is a big shift after he died, but we'll deal with it next week. Okay, if there are no questions, let me just... I want to comment on two matters that are interlocked. Before I begin, I just want to mention my nephew. We keep on talking about indexing the shurim. My nephew, who's been listening for many, many years, has four attachments linking certain concepts in the shirim. First of all, any stories I tell about the family, he has endless references. Anytime I got hysterical and yelled and maledicted someone, a rotten, malicious, hideous, heinous, etc., he has endless references. Stories in general I told, endless references. There he has the most. And references to Chassidim, endless references. If anyone wants a copy of this, contact Yomo. It's my nephew, Dr. Zev Rothkopf, the dentist. Now, I was sent a story by Chaim Chazaz, and I just want to mention the Zionist movement, Ben-Gurion, the irreligious Zionist, the secular Zionist, they simply believed that history of the Jewish people ended with Churban Bayit, and it picked up again with declaration of the State of Israel. And this was typical Zionist thinking. Today, anyone who believes this would not get into Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. His IQ would be too low. What happened? Yeah, Ben-Gurion. You look back at the founders of the state, how many of their children and descendants still live here? How many descendants do they have? The religious Zionist message, and ultimately a lot has been written. You have to be blind not to understand that without belief in Mashiach Tzidkenu, without belief in coming back, Binyan Habayit, Yerushalayim, Yecho, Barachim, Imtashev, Etachazene, Einenu, there would have never been a Herzl, there would never have been a Zionist movement. It's axiomatic. More than that, we now look back in 2,000 years of exile, what credit we owe to our Rabbanim, to our Gedolei Yisrael, to the Jewish people, that the love of Zion enabled us to survive 2,000 years of exile. Come back, how many different countries we come from. In my family alone, if I start tracing who my grandchildren married, and you take my brother and his family, and we start tracing all the families, we represent the kibbutz galut of 120 different countries, pshuto kamashma'o. And what do we have in common? The love of Zion, the love of Torah. So I'm not overwhelmed. Chaim Chazaz writes a little story, a novel, and makes Ben-Gurion's point. Just the opposite. The longer we live in Israel, the greater we appreciate the 2,000 years of Gullus that enabled us to come back in dignity. Just think, the Russian Communist Empire, the Rav Mori Rebbe, I quote him in the second volume of the Rav, he couldn't believe there are any Jews left in Russia who are religious. How could it be? How could it be? Look how the Six-Day War woke them up. I mean, there it is, right in our lifetime. Right in our lifetime. I remember what I was told, how they, remember I told you this over the years, that the television in Russia was totally controlled by the government, total propaganda. Mark and I would watch the television, we would die with laughter that night. They would have a commentator speak about America, what it's doing to the world, Israel destroying the world. And you'd see this guy with so many medals. When he would lean over, I would say to Malka, how's he going to lean back again? 100 pounds of medals on his bosom. And they told me they watched television, so they would see in 67 the videos of the people in Israel digging trenches in Jerusalem, boys and girls, that the Jordanian tanks shouldn't be able to advance. And the commentator is telling them these kids are all going to be killed, these boys, girls, they're going to wipe them out. And we weren't listening to what the commentary was. We were just looking at the pictures, and we saw our cousins. These are our people. And it reawakened them. And just think what we have in Israel today. Tens of thousands of Shomrei Torah mitzvot coming out of Russia. Becoming Shomrei Torah mitzvot. Yeah, we have lots of problems. We will overcome the problems. So I just want to say, don't be led astray by any stories of this was Ben-Gurion and Baruch Hashem. Any thinking individual, look around you, you'll see we can be proud of the gullus that we survived. Remember we spoke about Amalek in the Sunday Shia? Show me Amalek today. Okay? Show me Egypt today. And we have survived. Okay, but now I want to go to something much more serious. Mark, my dear student, Mark Wiener doesn't like the Rebbe. He likes to aggravate him. His son in Mir picked up a pamphlet they're giving out there, and boy, I read it, I didn't sleep at night. And this is dialogue. It's something from the writing world. I imagine it's to rival tradition. Could also be to put the brakes on Chakira. And they deal with contemporary problems. And in the Mir, they were giving out this article, Treif into Kosher, the story of Eretz HaKodesh by Rabbi Aharon Feldman. Rabbi Feldman is the Rosh Yeshiva of Nei Yisrael. He lived in Israel before he was appointed Rosh Yeshiva. He's actually saved the Yeshiva because there was no one that could fit in at that moment to become Rosh Yeshiva. And this article is pure Satma thinking. And I want to just give you the background. And it's not just pure Satma thinking, but if you follow his thinking, you are putting a knife into the Torah world. We're talking what could be billions of dollars. You're putting a knife into Eretz Yisrael, Yehuda, Shomron, parts of Yerushalayim. It's frightening, frightening. You know, you're entitled to your opinion, but it should say by Aaron Feldman, and put in parentheses, following the viewpoint of the Satmar Rav.
He supports AIDS.
Excuse me?
He's an AIDS supporter.
What supporter?
He is an AIDS supporter.
AIDS? I can't.
AIDS. What? The
Pelech HaYerushalmi. Don't even mention them. These are people who blocked roads.
This is what he is, you
know how many Haredim left the Haredi world and joined the Chadali world as a result? God have mercy. But hey, I want to explain. Let me give you the background. In the Jewish agency, any Jew outside of Israel has the right to vote if he pays the shekel. The truth of the matter is, there should not be a Jewish agency, there's a State of Israel, there's a Knesset. Many people felt the Jewish agency should be abolished. But politics, people's self-image, get enjoy titles, money, they do bring in money, they do distribute money here. Well, Jews in America have a say in Israel. I totally disagree. Jews in America have no say in Israel. You have a say when you come here, live here, vote here, serve in the army, part of the economy, pay taxes here. Then you have a say. Jews in America, I have a say in America. I have a say in England. All right. So the Jewish agency remained. Now, who controls the Jewish agency? You vote and you select parties. It's sort of like the Knesset. And until now, no Haredi voted the Jewish agency. It's Zionist, it's Treif. And this, somehow people started to realize, hey, wait a minute. We serve in the Knesset. If Rabbi Feldman is right, Agudat Yisrael should immediately leave the Knesset. He says, we joined the Jewish agency. We acknowledge Zionism. How do we serve in the Knesset? How do we take money from the Zionists? If his thinking is right. The last election, some Haredim, semi-Haredim, woke up and they organized a party. Let me just see what it's called. Eretz HaKodesh, I believe. But Eretz HaKodesh, all right. So I don't have to look it up. I know the person who organized it, or one of the organizers, Rabbi Pesach Lerner, formerly of the Young Israel, terrific individual. They got a fortune of votes. I understand Rabbi Shmuel Kamenetsky backed them. And because they got a fortune of votes, they are a power today in the Jewish agency. What they have accomplished, kol hakavod. Until recently, JNF was not allowed to do anything in Yehuda v'Shomron, because the Reform and Conservative Jews controlled the agency. That has been abolished. Thank God, Eretz Yisrael. Hundreds of millions of dollars have gone to Torah causes. But let me say something much more important. My dear students, joining the Jewish agency means you acknowledge Zionism? Morty, there is no Zionism left today. It doesn't exist. Zionism succeeded like no other movement in modern times. It created the State of Israel. Once you have a State of Israel, what are we talking about Zionism? The kids in North Tel Aviv are Zionists? The leaders that we heard yell and shout, we're lining up to leave Israel? They're Zionists. The people who yell, take your money out and put it into the Silicon Valley Bank? They're Zionists. I'm not a Zionist. I believe in Torah. And Eretz Yisrael is the basis of our existence as the Torah people. Israel, I'm Yisrael, the ultimate. Two more mitzvah. Of course I believe in Eretz Yisrael, which is Medinat Yisrael today. It's the political structure in Eretz Yisrael. Zionism. I couldn't believe what I read. That if you vote for the Jewish agency and you vote, you're acknowledging Zionism, chas v'chalila. Maybe 80 years ago, 90 years ago, 100 years ago, you could have that viewpoint. But I've said a million times, and I challenge anyone to prove me wrong, Zionism doesn't exist today. Medinat Yisrael exists. Eretz Yisrael exists. And Medinat Yisrael is a reflection of its population. The more from people who join us here, the bigger Eretz Yisrael is, the bigger Bayit Yehudi, Mizrahi, whatever it's called, the more say we have, the more influence we have, the more kippot in the public thoroughfare, the more women married with their head covered. What a state. How can you be angry? How can you be upset? Look how much has changed since 1948. Our blood, our sweat, our tears, our dedication, our commitment, our fealty, our innovativeness. Look at the yeshivot, look at the seminaries, look what we have achieved. What children, what descendants, filled with Torah and Yirat Shamayim. And if we can bring another $500 million for the sake of Torah, you don't want to vote for Torah parties in the Jewish agency? You don't want to vote for Torah parties in the Knesset? What are we talking about? And I can tell you, let me end off, and you can, too bad you can't check this with your father. When I learned in Lakewood, we cried for Rabbaran. Rabbaran, what the Satmarov did, Rabbaran said, Chilza. Obviously, had the Satmarov said, vote for Agudat Yisrael, you would have had two more seats. Two more seats, three more seats. What are you talking about? In today's terminology, billions of dollars for Torah. Unfortunately, this is the way the political system works. One day we'll reach a level where everyone will be Yireyim v'shleimim. Then everything will be according to Torah. Now you have to fight for every dollar. But the more representation, Rabbi Aaron, the Sat Muruf, Rabbi Aaron said, this was what told to us in the 50s, that because of the Sat Muruf, Kinuch Hatzmai cannot expand, Kinuch Hatzmai cannot have proper buildings, we can't take in all the children we want to take in. These children wind up, Mechalalei Shabbos, Ochlein Avelet and Trefet. And that's from a Shita, don't vote, don't join the Zionists. How can you think like this in the year 2024? Mark?
He makes a distinction between the Knesset and...
There's no distinction. Today, that represents the state of Israel. But do me a favor, take my article on Herzl, anyone listening, reprint 1 million copies and distribute them chinam ein kesef. My dear students, asicha ve'ekali, thank you for listening. Yomo signaling me that we soon have to leave and other classes coming in. Yomo, open it to the world if anyone wants to make a comment. Yitzchak, Mazel Tov, it worked out?
One second.
Open it. Unmute.
Yes. Recording stopped.
Yitzchak, Mazel Tov? We can't hear you. Unmute.
Saying that with all the students that you have, that you remember that our family is having a simcha.
We can't hear. Add to unmute.
He appreciates it with all the students.
Yeah, all the students. Yeah, that I heard. We didn't hear afterwards.
I'm saying that with all the students that you have, that you remember that we have a simcha. Was very touching to me personally, very touching to Deborah, my daughter, and the Chatan, and the family thanks you immensely.
Okay, I want to thank you, and it all worked out, because we heard last night they started shooting again, and Malka and I both looked at each other and said, oy vey, what's going to be with Yitzchak Simcha?
I know, because we were beyond the 40 kilometers, but nonetheless, we were near Ashdod.
Right. All right, Baruch Hashem, the couple should have the schut to build the Bayit Ne'eman B'Yisrael, and with all the beautiful commitment that the families they come from have. Okay, are there any other comments?
Rabbi, can I just say a few small points? Yeah. I remember you had asked, I had spent the Shabbat with Rabbi Riskin once. He wears like a blue bekesha when he goes to shul and because he's the rub of the town, he said to me. So, you know, he has to show that he's... The school today is my alma mater, the Isaac Breuer College. It's the
Isaac Breuer. That's what T.I. Morphed into.
I always joke that in Rehavia, I daven in Yitzchak Breuer Shul, in Horei.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I'm surrounded by him for my whole life. I know a lot of his descendants, I know, live in Yerushalayim.
Yeah,
the whole Breuer family.
I don't think there's any direct descendant of Rav Hirsch who remained anti-Zionist. You follow?
And no, they all are. Yeah, no, they're all Zionists.
I've met one after another, and they're all Baruch Hashem, Poli Aguda or real Mizrahi. The Rabbi Breuer I taught with, the first cousin to the Breuer I quoted earlier, the other Rabbi Mordechai Breuer, I taught with the Michalak. Oh boy, he was a Zionist, but he was, the Yekkers have a trend to be doves. And he used to yell at me, you ruined your son-in-law, you're a hawk. And I would say, all right, Baruch Hashem, you're complimenting me. Fascinating people. I'll tell you something else about him. I think I told you this over the decades. He would always get upset at the girls davening in the hallway between classes. And he said, we never saw this in Frankfurt. Da, 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 da. And I said, how can you get upset? They're talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam. They're davening Shmon Esrei. They're lamdaniyot. They don't want to be just yotze with one prayer a day, with one shtickel prayer a day. But he was something special. That's all I can tell you.
On the train just now, Rabbi, I had a young woman soldier sitting across from me in the middle. She stood up and sang Shmon Esrei. So,
Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem.
But just one more thing. What you said about the library in Heichal Shlomo, it was also the Strashun library, like half of it wound up there.
Yeah, right.
I remember Rabbi Lyman once spoke to us about it because they just threw the whole library out. It was, I remember they had it piled up in huge stacks. And he ran to Israel because he always wanted to own books in the Strashun Library. So he managed to grab a few volumes with the stamp. But it was like, when the rabbinate moved out, they just didn't want the library anymore. So they just dumped all the books.
Very sad. The truth is, in Yerushalayim, you can walk around and pick up a whole library. People pile up books they don't need. It's either that the grandparents died and the grandchildren left. We have it online. Why do we have to waste space on books? But all right, Baruch Hashem, life moves on and we should only have the Sorah Tova Jeshuk and Echamata Lenu
Bakhod Yisrael. I just saw your review of Rabbi Berman's book. I just saw it, Rabbi. So call it the book.
So do me a favor, send me a link to it. Let me see
sure,
how
sure.
it came
yeah,
out.
Yeah, tradition, put it up. I'll send you a link, sure.
Okay.
The Machina program was James Dreyer's school.
Yeah, that's what they told us
JSS,
here.
JSS,
correct. Yeah, JSS.
They tend to call Machina now, whatever. The model of the Holy Land that was moved to the museum about 17 years ago, that was the model of the whole city. The model of Baisheni from there was duplicated in Montreal for Expo 67 in the Judaism Pavilion.
Interesting.
Then it lasted, it stayed open because the two islands, not the peninsula where Moshe Safdie's architecture was, but the two islands stayed open a while after for Tel Dezum, or Man in His World, they called it, minus the U.S. Pavilion and the Soviet Pavilion.
Right, that's interesting information. But today, I know at the museum, you can see what you want to see. Is the whole city? I don't remember already what I saw. Yitzchak,
that was the whole city, but the one in Montreal was just the Mikdash.
Hey, Bunty. Yitzchak, you wanted to say something?
I want to tell you that Rabbi Kruzansky did the world a favor by publishing his two books. He was given to me the manuscripts. I bought the books of his Pomerantz. They are wonderful. They are really, if they be in Hebrew, we would call them sforim, because he goes through Ikori Yahadut in an organized manner. It was almost like listening to a shiur of the Rav. I mean it, because he is full of sources and organized and spoken in such a way that person, he's a wonderful communicator.
Right. I just corresponded with him the last few days. We've been going back and forth. But I want to tell you, I am very proud. And you should know that Rabbi Pruzansky is not only my student, but I can say something about him I can't say about anybody else. I knew his great-grandparents. Could you imagine? His great-grandfather was a shamus in a big shul in the Bronx. And his uncle was a musmach a little bit ahead of us in the yeshiva. I was very close with his uncle. He died very young. I don't think he made it out of his 20s. Again, cancer, as I recall. That was his uncle. And Kanayin Hara, he's in Israel, brought here by his children and grandchildren who live here. So Rabbi Stuart Pruzansky, the Pruz, as I used to call him in class,
Stephen
Pruzansky, right. Stephen Pruzansky is doing something right. All right, until we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya.